Unlike the Arizona Cardinals, we don't have the luxury of drafting in a whole host of second/third-string podcasters, so you're going to have to make do with the first-string offense of Tom and Callum for this, episode 127 of the British Birddown Breakdown. Spoiler alert, though, there's a lot to get through this time round, so here it goes for another episode.
Hi, Tom. How's your week been?
I mean, it's been a good week, hasn't it? You know, coming off another Cardinals win, you know, 8 wins on the season. What more can you ask for, really?
I used to quite like hitting that 8-win margin because, of course, before when it was a 16-game season, when you hit 8, you were like, okay, it's not going to be a losing season. At the very least, it's going to be a 500 season. But now we still need to get one more.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, guys like Jeff Fisher would have been celebrating that 8-win, wouldn't he? But, you know, he could only manage 7 most of the time.
Exactly. Another good Cardinals win, something that... it was a really good, a feel-good moment after a tough loss to Green Bay last week. And I think especially, you know, a surprising game given the personnel that we went in with.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those games, you know, didn't really know which way it would go, but I think we should probably save that talk until we cover the news because we've actually got a news item to talk about this episode.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, as with a lot of the podcast news that we do these days, it is injury related, and specifically it's about JJ Watt and Rashard Lawrence are both moving to injured reserve.
Yeah, I mean, they're not unexpected moves, you know, with the Cardinals making the procedural movements to, they went on this weekend with JJ Watt being placed on IR. So, like, there was talk maybe he could make it back without having surgery, but like, we don't know if there has been any surgery, if there is going to be any surgery. It's not like the Cardinals have been, they've been very tight-lipped on it, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, to me, almost him going on to IR is kind of like, okay, that's surgery going to happen. But, I mean, I think regardless, is like, whether it's surgery or not, you're still looking at probably a January return for him, right? Or at the very earliest, like, late December.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we still hold out hope that he might return at some point, but at least the roster spot has been opened up for someone like St. Albans' Josh Morrow.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you talk about both these guys moving, both JJ Watt and Rashard Lawrence moving to IR, that's primarily the thing that's happening there. You know, it's paperwork and bureaucracy to open up spaces that are, you know, because we have a deep defensive line, but obviously, you know, being able to play around with those spots is huge.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we have got the, like you say, we have got a pretty deep defensive line. So it's like, you know, we'll just have to see what the make do with going forward this season, you know, without JJ Watt and without Lawrence for who knows how long.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Rashard Lawrence of the two is the guy who you would expect to be coming back potentially after the 3-week stay as opposed to JJ, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really too sure what the severity of Rashard Lawrence's injury is, or even, to be honest, what his injury actually is, because I'm not sure if it's been mentioned anywhere. I mean, it probably has. It just might have slipped past us, like these things do.
Yeah, exactly. I don't remember getting a specific out about it, but I mean, it could also be that, yeah, as you said, you know, they don't really know for sure what it's going to be. But that's not the only injuries we have to talk about. But I think the rest of them we might as well cover as they come up in the game recap, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it was that good of a game to watch for the Cardinals, you know, positives all over the place. We do need some negatives to talk about, you know, for balance and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think we can squeeze them in there. But yeah, as you said, overall a pretty positive game where the Cardinals beat the San Francisco 49ers 31-17.
Yeah, I mean, they put the disappointing Green Bay loss in the rearview mirror as they picked up their second win over the 49ers this season. So I suppose we should be getting the brooms out because the sweep has been complete.
Can you really call it a sweep when it's only 2 games? I mean, I'm happy to call it a sweep, but... Yeah,
I mean, it's definitely more of a baseball thing, isn't it? You know, when they have these like mini series against the same opponents, exactly, over a few days. But yeah, you know, it's the Niners, so any time to embarrass them, I'll take it.
I mean, not just that, but it's been a couple of years since we beat them in both games, I think, even when they've been terrible.
Yeah, I mean, they always found that way, didn't they, just to thwart us and, you know, get that victory when they really shouldn't have done.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, this game was kind of almost the opposite of that. You know, it's like quite often they would come up against us as like a full strength team, and they'd be beaten up and somehow win, versus this time when, you know, we went in with a pretty beaten up team were able to absolutely destroy them. So yeah, definitely a case, I think, of putting the Green Bay loss firmly in that rearview mirror, and felt like the team didn't miss a beat, to be honest.
Yeah, but like you say, we came into this game shorthanded and we left it even more injury hit.
Yeah, you can't ignore the negatives of the game in that regard, because, yeah, I mean, immediately as well, like, we had one play out of Chase Edmonds, who's key figure in the offense, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he hobbled off after what was apparently an ankle injury and it was never seen from again. But it was revealed on Monday by Cliff Kingsbury that he had suffered a high ankle sprain and will miss, quote, a few weeks.
Yeah, I think average for a running back, or like average time out for a running back with a high ankle sprain would be like 2 or 3 weeks or something. So especially with the bye, you would kind of hope that he'd be able to come back after the bye there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a positive spin on that injury, if there is such a thing, but the Arizona State / Arizona Cardinals hybrid fans will be glad, because that will mean seeing more of Eno Benjamin on the field.
Yeah, which should be a positive, and, you know, maybe we can catch up a bit more with Eno Benjamin later on.
Yes, but before him, we have more injuries to talk about, because left guard Justin Pugh was carted to the locker room with what was diagnosed as a calf injury and has also been considered day-to-day per Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, I think, you know, such a tough lineman injury. You know, it's like one of those sort of rolling up injuries that it looked like he picked up. And yeah, here's hoping that it's one of those ones that was just like, you know, an acute injury that was like sore and tricky to deal with right then and there, but is easy to come back from, rather than something that's going to be like a niggle that he's going to deal with. Because Justin Pugh, obviously one of the key figures in that offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, we also lost another offensive lineman during the game because Max Garcia had apparently re-aggravated his Achilles injury.
Yeah, which is, you know, how many games had he been back for now?
And then I think he was back for a few, wasn't he? Because he was deputizing for Rodney Hudson while he was out.
He was, yeah.
But then he got injured, and then we ended up with, was it Sean Harlow at center last week?
I can't remember specifically, but that sounds fair. But yeah, obviously that's it's a tricky loss. You know, like you can't shuffle these guys around too much without starting to really feel it.
Yeah, I mean, we do have a, like the defensive line, we have some depth there. We do have a bit of depth on the offensive line. And of course, with guys like Justin Murray and Rodney Hudson coming back, that depth got a bit better going into this game. But now we've come out of it with two losses, haven't we?
Yeah, and the tricky bit with a lot of the depth in the O-line is that some of it does rely on playing guys out of their preferred position. Which is, you know, like, they're all very talented, and I know they can do it, but it's obviously not ideal, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, like if you have to shuffle people to positions they don't want to play necessarily, to bring in somebody behind them, you know, then kind of almost two positions suffer rather than just the one.
Yeah, but I think probably the biggest injury that we suffered was that of long snapper Aaron Brewer, who will miss a couple of weeks with his undiagnosed injury. Well, it's either that or I'm just too lazy to find out what it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, long snapper is a tricky position, and it's one that, I mean, we definitely don't talk about it that much. But if you think about, you know, a lot of the big plays or a lot of scoring plays as well, you know, he factors into those. He factors into every PAT, he factors into every kick attempt and every punt as well. And those are all obviously like very key pivotal plays. And it is a very, very specific skill set.
Have we ever actually mentioned a long snapper on here before? Besides on the like the episode, you know, when we run through the 53 man roster. I think we only get a token mention. I don't think we've ever mentioned a long snapper, have we?
I think we have a few years ago, back when there was that blind long snapper doing the rounds, and there was some sort of chat about that, but I don't specifically remember it. But yes, that as I said, not often that it comes up.
Sadly, there is one other negative before we move on to the positives in this one, and that is Mark Sanchez.
Yep. Definitely not my favorite coverage. I would say that of all the times that we've had to put up with him this season, that was probably the least egregious overall.
Well, you mean despite his blatant homerism for the 49ers, which just seemed to come out every single time they did something?
Well, I mean, there was that, but it was there were fewer, like, you know, misnaming of players and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the third time this season we have had to put up with him on commentary. And, you know, he kept mentioning, like, the Niners surge, didn't he? But that never came.
Yeah. It made it all the more funny, to be honest, is the fact that just, yeah, as you said, it was blatant homerism. And you know, I think it's one of those things I find it hard to agree with on Twitter, because I think people tend to overreact to that, but like, this had to be some of the worst bias in a commentary that I've seen in a while, probably since the Rams game.
Yeah, I mean, he did call James Conner John a couple of times, like I just nearly did.
Yeah, it gets confusing, doesn't it? But yeah, he's still on that, which is a very odd one.
And then he tried to turn it into a Terminator joke
again. It's again, like, yeah. He's made that joke a few times, but no, that man needs to be not in a commentary booth. He's not great. It's a tricky job, don't get me wrong. I don't think I could do it, but he's not fun to listen to.
I mean, it just seems like too one-sided towards the Niners, even though they've done nothing this season.
Yeah, I think that's the odd one, isn't it? It's just like, it's almost as though he did all of his research on the Niners side and wanted to talk about them. I mean, it could be that he's just, you know, that's who he wanted to win. Maybe he put a bet on them or something.
Yeah, or he might be just jealous that Colt McCoy still has an NFL job and he doesn't.
Unless, let's not get started on Colt McCoy right now, because if you start me, I won't stop.
Yeah, but I mean, if you do want to twist this to a positive regarding Mark Sanchez, such a thing does exist. The Arizona Cardinals are 3-0 when Butt Fumble is on the call.
It's funny. I think when you were, you know, sending me a message earlier in the week saying like, well, what the hell are we going to talk about for negatives? I brought up some Mark Sanchez and you did say, yep, we are 3-0. Then again, we've also only lost one. So, you know, how much of a good luck charm is he really?
That is true. You know, we shouldn't give him too much credit for these wins. You know, he's not the one actually playing them, is he? He's not the coach. He's not the quarterback. He's just some guy in the commentary booth making crappy jokes and references no one cares about.
I'll tell you what, though. I will give some good credit to the actual quarterback, the actual leader of the offense throughout that game. And we'll just get into the positives and talk about Colt McCoy because, wow. I mean, I don't know about you, but the minute I heard that Kyler Murray wasn't playing, you know, it's worrying, isn't it?
I mean, it is worrying to an extent, but it's not like Colt McCoy is a terrible quarterback, is he? Like, he's been around the NFL for that long, and he has had a certain degree of success, hasn't he, when he's been a starter?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, in terms of overall career starts, I think he's done, like, 30-something. So, like, you know, 2.5 seasons worth or so actual starts. But, you know, there's a reason that he's there as a backup. And I think it's interesting because if you watch the post-game speech that Cliff Kingsbury did where he gives out the game balls, he made reference to the fact that, like, oh, you know, when we told Colt McCoy he was coming in, we said, you're going to make a great mentor, you're going to be able to help with all these things. And Colt said, but I can still play. And, you know, I think that was really just what was on display this week.
Yeah, I was actually going to just mention that part because I could just imagine him saying that, you know, to Cliff Kingsbury. He's like, Cliff's like reeling off all these things he wants him to do with Kyla. And then at the end, he's just like, yeah, but I can still play, you know?
And boy, did he. You know, I think he, like, it looked like a pretty full playbook he was playing with as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously no one's ever going to mistake him for Kyla Moriarty, but he did a solid job. And, you know, for the Cardinals this week, in place of the injured MVP in waiting.
Yeah, exactly. 22 for 26 passes for 272 yards and a touchdown, which is pretty solid work considering that, you know, his first team reps were this week.
Yeah, I mean, he did take the first team reps. I think it was every single day, wasn't he, just in case Kyla wasn't able to play?
Well, I think at the same time, you know, it's like they had the dual thing of like, they'll let Kyler rest and then therefore he's not going to take the first team reps anyway. And then also, you know, it gets Colt ready for the game. And, you know, it's something that, you know, because you've got a backup coming in, you know, to play the actual game and you know that's going to happen, they get a chance to do that versus, you know, like, I think that if we'd seen Kyler get injured on play one and Colt McCoy come in, I don't think we'd have seen as good a performance from him as we did this week when he was just, you know, able to be prepared and go in, you know, fully loaded.
Yeah, I mean, he did have a good performance, so much so he did make it to number two in the franchise record list for single game completion percentage.
That is wild.
Yeah, he finished with 84.7% completions, which is only behind Kurt Warner's 92.3% that he had against Jacksonville in 2009.
This is a good stat. It's a good stat. And let's not forget that he did that without the wide receiver one, too.
And the wide receiver two as well, let's be honest. That's AJ true. Green, yep. Wasn't there?
Yeah, that is true. So that's a pretty big achievement, really. And like, overall, you know, you got to say that, like, performance-wise, he looked calm, confident. For an older guy as well, I say older, he's not that old, but, like, for a not very young quarterback, he was very mobile, you know, getting around the field a lot and able to dodge defenders and everything. And not just that, but, like, you know, managed to keep the ball out of San Francisco's hands specifically as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's really what you want him to do, isn't it? You know, just like stay in the pocket, make the passes, not turn the ball over stupidly, you know, just take what they give you. And that's just what he seemed to do, didn't he? It's not like he had to push the ball down the field that many times. I think he had maybe like two or three long completions.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, like, we can talk about it perhaps later, but the... you know, San Francisco defense did help us out with a few big penalties to kind of keep the ball moving. But generally speaking, you know, he was able to just grind out those small gains and, you know, like, just make those second and third downs count and just gaining all those first downs, you know, when it was needed.
Yeah, I mean, you did mention penalties, and I'm not sure where we could have fit this one in, but the sort of hoo-ha between Cliff Kingsbury and Josh Norman.
That's the first time in a long time I've seen a coach get flagged for something.
I don't think I've ever seen it, to be honest. I mean, I've seen it in football, you know, like where they send the manager off or send him to the stand sort of thing, but I've never seen it in the NFL.
Didn't Mike Tomlin get a flag for stepping on the field, or did he just get fined?
I think he got fined after the game because it wasn't proved after? During, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, there you go then. It was, definitely in that case, the first time I've ever seen a head coach get flagged, especially for, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct or whatever it was. That was great. I'm a big Cliff Kingsbury fan anyway, and just like, yeah, seeing him being able to have a moment there, that works for me.
It would be interesting to know what was being said, but I don't think Cliff's disclosed what was said, has he?
I saw a meme going around where it was just like the picture of Cliff shouting at him. It was like, last time you were a good corner, I was coaching college.
I mean, I could imagine him saying that. That would be pretty fun.
I don't think that's what he said, but I like it, you know.
Yeah, I think it was just some banter between the two of them. I think that's what he said in the post-game press conference anyway. And I mean, I did see as well DJ Humphries stepping up to like get in between Norman and Kingsbury.
That's a pretty good bodyguard, isn't it? DJ Humphries.
Like, he protects the quarterbacks on the field, now he's protecting the head coach off the field.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then he said something as well after the game, like he was looking for Josh Norman, but he couldn't see him anywhere. So like Josh Norman was scared of him.
Nice. I mean, ultimately, I don't think either of those penalties really impacted the game particularly, you know.
No, I mean, it's not like the Monday Night Football game, which is still being discussed, you know, by everyone. Man.
Yeah, that was pretty wild. I mean, I didn't stay up to watch it or anything like that, but everything I've seen about it today looks unbelievable in terms of weird penalties.
But like we always say, we're not a podcast for them, are we? We're a podcast for the Cardinals, so, you know. If you want Steelers exactly. and Bears talk, go elsewhere.
Yeah, and if you if we're going to continue talking about the Cardinals, I think we need to talk about, outside of Colt McCoy, the other big standout player from the game, and that has to be James Conner.
Yeah, I mean, I did toy with opening the positives with this guy, but it felt like Colt deserved some love because, you know, he definitely did not get it in the British Birdground Breakdown Player of the Game Award voting.
Yeah, I think James Conner pretty much destroyed the voting for that, pretty much the same way he destroyed the San Francisco defense on his third touchdown of the game.
How dare you steal my joke?
I was just saying it, and then I saw it there. I was like, oh, I'm having it. I'm having it.
I write these jokes for myself. It's not for anyone else.
You just stop giving me them then.
Oh, well, I'll make a separate document in future just with jokes on.
Anyway, pretty big win for him for the British Birdland Player of the Game Awards. Clearly, that's what stuck in people's minds in terms of performance.
I mean, it does make him back-to-back winner as well. Seems as he took the award last week against Green Bay. Yeah. But yeah, in this one, he had three scores with over 170 total yards. You know, it was just a great game from him, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think he put like 40-something fantasy points up as well, which if you consider that, you know, like having him on your team would be a bit of an odd one. I mean, he's got good touchdown potential, but like in terms of yards, he's not really picking up those points on the regular. But yeah, absolutely excellent. Excellent performance from him, and he really, you know, you worry when you've got that running back by committee that if you put all the work on one guy, that he's going to suffer from that. But he seemed to be able to take on the Chase Edmonds, you know, like marching down the field role pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, usually he's only getting against Green Bay, he had five touches and turned them into two touchdowns, and he said that was a decent amount of fantasy points if you started him, but like, you know, if you had him starting for this one, he'd have been like, you might have won the game because of him.
Yeah, ridiculous. Exactly. But yeah, just really, really cementing himself as one of the big touchdown scorers for the team, which is great because, you know, when we signed him on from the Steelers, I remember all the people at the time sort of saying like, oh, well, there's no real point because he had that one good season with the Steelers and then he was rubbish the next season. And that was just a flash in the pan. But to me, this shows that if you use him right, then he's going to be, just an excellent player for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he did take up a lot more with Chase going down in the game. So he was used a lot more in the passing game that we're far more not used to seeing, are we?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just I think he adapted pretty well overall and clearly looked like he was having fun out there on the field.
Yeah, I mean, he is now on 11 touchdowns for the season, which leads the NFL. So it's
pretty wild, isn't it? It is pretty wild, like the idea of, you know, this guy who is just one of our offensive weapons is out there leading the, leading the NFL, you know.
I mean, technically, Derrick Henry does have 11 touchdowns because he has 10, doesn't he? But then he also passed for one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
But, you know, we're only counting the ones that James Conner's got. So James Conner rules.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, big game for him and seemed like he was just having a good time.
There is one other running back we do need to mention, though, like we alluded to earlier in the episode.
Who's that, then?
It's Eno Benjamin, of course.
Ah, yeah, of course. I forgot that we were coming back to Eno Benjamin, yeah.
I mean, so did I. I just remembered it was like, it's not on the document. We may as well mention him here now. But yeah, that run where he ran over Dre Kirkpatrick on his way to the end zone.
Oh, that was pretty wild, wasn't it?
Did you see that he won the Angry Runs Award for it as well?
I didn't, but that seems like it fits the bill pretty well, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've had two of them this year now because we had James Conner in week one and now Eno Benjamin took it this week. You know, hopefully we see a lot more Eno Benjamin with Chase Edmonds out.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we could see the two of them work together the same way that Edmonds did before, because it would be nice, obviously, obviously, you know, Benjamin being a, you know, young guy and with him being a local guy as well, you know, seeing him come in and be able to pick up some of the role and just prove himself would be cool.
It'd be good for my fantasy team as well because he's been rotting on the bench for like forever.
Ah.
So, you know.
It's not a bad investment. Not a bad investment.
I mean, of course, it wasn't just the running backs and the offense. You know, we had plenty of receivers on show, even with two of the guys out.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, AJ Green off for COVID and DeAndre Hopkins out with an injury. Most targeted two receivers, I would say, for sure. Obviously, over the last couple of weeks. But Christian Kirk coming in, having a good time. Antoine Wesley just, you know, having a couple of very specifically good moments as well.
Yeah, I mean, can we talk about the trick play?
Yeah, what was going on there? Because that was like, it looked to me like he had the touchdown, like the ball had crossed a little bit of the plane, but I guess it was just not quite enough.
I think he twisted his body the wrong way. Like, if he did turn to his right, or his left or right, you know, whichever one he didn't turn to, you'd have got it over the pylon before going out of bounds. But, yeah, I mean, we have actually run that play before this season, but it never turned out like a wide receiver passed. It was like, I think it was used as
a run, wasn't it?
Yeah, the other way, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's
like, which is cool because it's clearly it's like a trick play option as well, which is nice.
And it's not even supposed to be them running it because I think they did say it was supposed to be DeAndre Hopkins on the reverse, throwing the ball to AJ Green.
Interesting. Okay. Well, you know, I think obviously, because it was Christian Kirk that threw, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I mean, a nice 33-yard completion from him.
Yeah, and it was a pretty good throw as well. You know, like quite often when you see these, like, sort of flea flicker style plays or you know, like wide receivers thrown out the backfield, you do see a little bit of a duck get thrown on it.
I'll tell you who had a nice wide receiver pass, like last week, I think it was. The Dallas Cowboys wide receiver. He had one hell of a throw on him.
Like, I don't think I saw that highlight.
You should look it up. It's just like a really nice spiral from him. Like, even a quarterback, you'll see many can't throw a tight spiral as that.
I mean, I think ultimately with a lot of these wide receivers, you know, it's like a lot of them are, because they were obviously going to have been the most athletic guy in high school. So a lot of them just played quarterback for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you do hear a lot of like wide receivers like going to quarterback and vice versa. Like, obviously, yeah, Ryan exactly. Tannehill. Yep. I think the Broncos have got one. Julian Edelman, he was a quarterback once upon a time. It's like, you know, it's just one of those positions, isn't it? Like, if you've got that in your arsenal, you're just yet another weapon for your offensive coordinator, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what we've got.
Yeah, well, it worked out for them, you know. Christian Kirk to Antoine Wesley. I would say that's one that would be a difficult one to call before the season, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, like, I do now want to see what DeAndre Hopkins looks like throwing a ball in the game.
Yeah, that would rule. I mean, there's still half a season to go, so it might show up at some point.
Or maybe there's like a different wrinkle to that play now. You know, now you've shown one of another one. Maybe Cliff Kingsley's got like several more in his play sheet, hasn't he? And it's like, yeah, this time we'll do the same play, but like, I don't know,
just make it a straight up pass or something. Yeah, possibly. I mean, that would be a pretty terrifying one to watch, I imagine, because Kyler Murray making an open field catch sounds like a bad time. But still. No, I think overall, you got to say that the wide receiver group, you know, generally made a big impact, except for one notable exception.
I mean, yeah, Andy Isabella was anonymous, but, you know, we can't have it all, can we?
It's true, but I'm just, you know, after we were talking a bit about, you know, Isabella possibly being off the team, and we thought, you know, like, oh, if he's sticking around, they must be there for a reason or whatever. But, you know, I guess also, like, you just can't be always open or whatever, right?
Yeah, I mean, we did see him on a few special teams plays, but other than that, it was like, yeah.
It's usually where he's about, isn't it?
Yeah, we did see Rondale Moore a few times as well, and we haven't mentioned him yet. So there's his mention for the episode.
Yeah, he gets a mention. I mean, like, no big Rondale Moore special play like we saw a few weeks ago, but you know, ultimately, for having a backup quarterback and essentially, you know, a second string set of receivers, that's pretty good movement of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we did have a lot of good offensive players, but I think the defense, you know, they pretty much stood out for this game throughout, didn't they?
Yeah, big time. I mean, of course, like, obviously the 49ers had some yards going on. They managed to get up at 10 points that I don't think they necessarily deserved. But, you know, the fact that our defensive line got to Jimmy G five times, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he did have quite a few yards through the air, but he also eat a lot of turf from Levi Stadium as the defense harassed him.
Yeah, he did.
And like you say, he had five sacks of him. Three of those came from Marcus Golden, who, you know, he's a superb signing, continuing to deliver each and every week, isn't he?
Big time, yeah. I mean, even the weeks when he's not putting up sacks or anything like that, he is just constantly there making big pressures, making, you know, quarterbacks throw balls they really don't want to.
Yeah, and the crazy thing with Golden is he's on a 2-year, $9 million deal.
That's so cheap, isn't it?
It's just a bargain. It's like,
yeah.
He should hold out after this season, I think, and be like, I'm not going to play next season unless you pay me more.
Yeah, I really wouldn't. It wouldn't surprise me if he did. And to be honest, you know, he deserves it for the amount of effort that he's putting in. And he's really turning into like a defensive leader, you know.
I mean, he's a fan favorite. I mean, obviously, I think the team must love him as well. You know, every time he does something, you see a whole host of players going around him, don't you? It's like, sort of guy you want to build a team around. Well, maybe not build around, but like, he's the sort of guy you want loads of that sort of player on your team, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. He sort of fits in with that alpha tag mentality that we were talking about in the around about the draft.
Yeah, we also had one sack apiece from Jordan Phillips, who finally did something in a Cardinals uniform.
Yeah, I've been very anonymous up to this point, but there you go. Yeah, one sack from him. And then also the big one, of course.
Yeah, the big one coming from Chandler Jones, who we should also congratulate him on becoming the leader in franchise sacks all time.
Which is pretty amazing. And like, he did pay a nice tribute as well.
He did, yeah. He's had a T-shirt on underneath his. I think
he must have had that on for the last like eight games or something like that, right?
I think he did say after the game he's only had it on after like the Green Bay game and this one. So
okay, yeah.
He's obviously been sensing that sack's been coming.
He's been feeling it. But yeah, first sack for him, I think, since week one, right?
Yeah, that does mean he gets to move up on the sack race chart, which I have yet to update, but I will do shortly because, you know, it's been a bit bare this week.
Yeah, there's been movement, but yeah, not much over the last little while. But I mean, overall, you got to say defense did a pretty good job. But you know, defensive line with sacks and everything. But to me, the big place that the defense did well is forcing turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we came into this game, Colt McCoy in the offense kept the ball safe and had no turnovers, except for really one where they decided to go for it on fourth and really long, but weren't able to convert. But I don't think that counts as a turnover as such, does it?
Well, it's not a peck and it's not a fumble. You know, it was an odd choice, but, you know, at least I would count it as Colt McCoy and the offense keeping it clean. But, you know, our defense managing to take the ball away from San Francisco three times is pretty good.
I mean, like we were saying in the game recap from the Green Bay game, where we were -3 in the turnover differential, and look how that game turned out. You know, had we not turned the ball over that much, we'd have probably been winning that game and been undefeated still. But going into this one, we had the three turnovers from San Francisco. They had none. And so, you know, we ended up scoring points off these turnovers like we seem to do on a regular basis. And then we get the win, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's just the nice thing, because that's what you seem to see coming out of it, right? Is like a good chance of scoring every time we get the ball back from one of those. And, you know, as I said, the defense out doing their job with picking those balls off and, you know, causing a lot of fumbles this time.
Yeah, I mean, we had three separate turnovers in this one. We had Byron Murphy punching the ball out from George Kittle when he tried to hurdle Buda Baker,
which I think was a really satisfying one to me, because it looked like Kittle thought he'd got away with it, you know?
Yeah, and then there was like, have you seen the Wired from this game? Because it was Byron Murphy who was wired up for the...
No, I've not seen it. What happened?
He just makes some sort of comment like, you know, that's what you get for trying to hurdle my brother, Buddha, or something like that.
Nice.
And of course, we had Jordan Hicks recovering that fumble. And he also recovered the second fumble when Isaiah Simmons ripped the soul out of Brandon Ayuk.
Sorry, I hadn't seen the wording you'd written for that. But yeah, I got to say, like, I think just to mention Jordan Hicks again there, he, you know, he does seem to be in the right place, right time for a lot of these things, right?
Yeah, I mean, there is plenty of times when he's not in the right place for things, but, you know, he is a dependable player, isn't he? Like, he's not really good in coverage, but tackling, you know, like you say, when the ball's loose on the ground, he managed to get both of them before the Niners could.
Just good at thinking on his feet, for sure.
Yeah, I think as well, I should mention Brandon Ayuk. He had a couple of really good catches in this game, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Probably one of their standout players, really.
Yeah, the catch, the one that ended up being the fumble by Simmons, like, he caught the ball, like, he went to the ground, got back up because no one had touched him, and then he probably should have just stayed down, shouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that's a tricky decision when you're playing like that, is if you've not been, you know, touched down or whatever. You got to be aware when you get back up. It's going to take you time to get back up, and then you've got to get moving. And that whole time, people are heading towards you. You know,
I mean, it's Isaiah Simmons as well, isn't it? It's like probably under a second. He's like on his tail.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that was a big one. And then finally, of course, there's the Buda Baker INT.
Yeah, once again, Buda Baker comes up with the goods, doesn't he? Like, nearly got hurdled by Kittle earlier in the game, but then he gets a pick of Jimmy Garoppolo to pretty much seal the game and victory for the Cardinals. What more can you ask for?
Well, I mean, here's the interesting thing is, like, you know, the whole of NFL media, everything is going to be biased towards offense, and it always is, always will be. But every time we go into a game, you know, there's all this talk about the Cardinals' electric offense and how many points they're going to score and everything else. But ultimately, you know, the defense is out here winning as many games for us as the offense is. And you know, I think that they put in an excellent performance on Sunday, and it really does, you know, need to have that recognised as well.
I mean, there has been talk today. Like, I think Cliff Kingsbury was asked it in his press conference he had earlier today regarding, like, Sean Coogler and Vance Joseph potentially being head coach candidates for other teams.
I think, like, Vance Joseph for sure. You know, if he's not in the mix, then something's wrong, right?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely deserves another chance at it because, you know, I mean, he wasn't terrible with Denver. It was just like a really bad situation because I don't think they ever gave him a good quarterback. Like, they had a terrible offensive line. So it was like he was always destined to fail because they weren't able to address that need.
Yeah, exactly.
But in Arizona, he's just been brilliant, hasn't he? You know, like, he's got Cliff Kingsbury doing all the offensive stuff, so he just has to concentrate on their defense, making them as good as they are, and it's really showing up this season, isn't it?
Yeah, sort of defensive masterminds as well. I mean, I wonder, while we're talking about it, how much a, you know, potential, like, say we don't, you know, get to the Super Bowl this year, say we don't win or whatever, how much a potential, you know, like, another run at that would be worth to a coach?
I mean, you have seen it before, you know, with guys like Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City and Todd Bowles in Tampa Bay. You know, they're more willing to, like, stay where they are just because maybe, like, the jobs that have come up aren't anywhere near as good a situation, are they?
Yeah, like, if you're Vance Joseph and you get offered to go and coach the Jets or something like that, you might be looking at that offer and going like, well, actually, you know, I think I'll leave it. But if you get, you know, offered a coaching position at a better team or an up and coming team, and, you know, I think that's one you might be more likely to go for.
Yeah, I mean, you never know. He could end up staying in the division, you know, going to somewhere like Seattle if they get rid of Pete Carroll.
Yeah, stranger things have happened, that's for sure.
I mean, I'm not saying he will do, but, you know.
No.
If there's a job available. You'd be mad all not in all, to it's one of interview those, him.
Yeah, exactly. But it's one of those things. It's a good problem to have, ultimately.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have had before guys who've gone from coordinator to head coach and completely flame out, haven't he? You know,
yeah.
What's his name? James Betcher. He went to New York Giants and then completely. I think he's off the face of the planet these days.
Even in college football. You could argue Steve Wilkes as well.
Yeah, and he's now in college football with one of the worst defenses in the entire country. Which, I mean, considering how many college teams there are in the entire country, it's like,
that's a not pretty a good big, sign. Yeah, that's a pretty, pretty difficult thing to do.
And yet he somehow manages it.
Before we start speculating too much about Steve Wilkes, we should move on and get through some fantasy football.
Yeah, I think we have talked about this game, you know, a bit enough now.
I think we've covered everything, right?
Yeah, I mean, Cardinals are 8-1. Still, nobody predicted that. Still, there's plenty of power rankings where they're not the number one team for some bizarre reason. I've seen one where they're as low as 4.
Ooh, yikes! I've seen a lot where they're a bit higher than that. But I guess as a final, you know, thought on all of that, as you said, Cardinals are 8-1, and at the start of the season, when we were looking at the schedule, we thought it was a tough start and an easier end to the schedule. And we're kind of through the toughest games almost that we were thinking we were going to have. And obviously, like, that's not to say that it's all said and done for. You know, we're still going to play the Rams again. We're still going to play the Seahawks twice. And, you know, no games are given in the NFL, but, like, you gotta have good hope for the future.
I mean, we are getting dangerously close to our season prediction on wins and losses, aren't we? Yeah,
we're running up against it. But again, good problems to have.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure we definitely won't care, will we? You know, like, we both predicted 9 and 10 wins respectively. But it's like, if we end up winning like 13, 14 games and we're both wrong, we won't care, will we?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we're not going to put down any number on, like, what we think our season record will be at the end of the season because, you know, like, the Cardinals will be 1-0 every week. That's all we'll aim for.
Yeah, Absolutely.
And let's just hope that's how it turns out at the end of the season.
And speaking of being 1-0 on the week, I heard that you had a bit of a good one with the Bird Gang Bowl.
I mean, yeah, finally. It actually happened. It took 9 weeks, but the Saving Private Kime finally won a game in the Bird Gang Bowl, and it came against the current best team in League One as well, just to be even weird about it.
It's funny that fantasy does that to you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was only a 132.78 to 107.98 victory, with Jonathan Taylor's superb Thursday night football performance the basis of the victory. You know, probably won't last, but, you know, we got to cherish this victory because it's the only one we've had so far this season.
Meanwhile, I'm in for a double win in fantasy, where in the Dynasty League I won by 30-odd points against Ali after, some pretty good scoring, I think, particularly from my running backs. And also just putting Chris Boswell out there and having him just kick insane number of field goals. And in the Bird Gang Bowl, I won by 20-something points despite having an empty slot on the roster because my opponent had, you know, for instance, Marcus Johnston scoring minus 0.7 points.
Whoever Marcus Johnston is. Have you ever heard of him?
He's a wide receiver for Tennessee.
Ah, that figures.
Anyway, I chalked up two wins, which I think is one of the signs of the apocalypse.
I mean, it's the first time this season, isn't it? You've managed that.
It's the first time this season I've done a double win, yeah. And I think it's only my fifth or sixth win overall for the season from those two leagues anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I did see in the Dynasty League that has pushed you up to 11th out of 12.
Yeah, I did. I got moved myself off of the bottom space there, which is good because I've got no room for a wooden spoon here.
But tanking for the pick, who knows?
It's true, yeah. Yeah, good pick.
I mean, it wasn't quite as good news for me in the Dynasty League as the recent winning run came to an end. A disappointing loss to State 48, 142.66 to 163.42, with a few low scores to consign us to a fourth loss of the season. And it's not like I could have done much different about it because I don't think we had enough at all on the bench to make up for it, so we move on and sit fifth in the league now, outside of the playoff spots. But we still got a few weeks to see if anything changes on that front.
These are the close weeks for that kind of thing. You know, this is where it's all made or lost, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're top now, it doesn't mean you're going to be top in like week 14, are you, when the playoffs begin?
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows what's going to happen?
But yeah, I mean, I think ultimately this is all being contributed to by what was a bit of a weird week around the league, where, you know, our week that we thought was going to be just locked in weekly pick-ems only turned out to be 8-6.
Yeah, I mean, that was my score at least, 8-6. You know, like, who can predict the Jacksonville Jaguars beating Buffalo 9-6?
That was such an odd game.
Yeah, I mean, I've looked at my record for the whole season, and I am currently at 93-43 for the season, which is a 68% correct
prediction. Not bad.
I mean, I'll take it, you know. I'm not sure what it's compared to, like, previous seasons, but, you know.
Well, you put it this way, you're 18% above a random number generator, so that's a good place to be.
I'll take that. Especially if that random number generator is Pro Football Focus.
Well, we know that they've got a solid one there. But this week I've been through and had a look at all of the games, and we've got essentially two differences, which mean that we both agree that Baltimore are going to beat Miami, Dallas are going to beat Atlanta, Indianapolis are going to take the Jags, while Cleveland are going to beat New England. We're both saying Buffalo over the Jets, Pittsburgh over Detroit, Tampa Bay over the Washington football team, Chargers over Minnesota, Denver to beat Philadelphia, Kansas City to beat the Raiders, and the Rams over San Francisco in a divisional game.
Which That would mean the only two differences are New Orleans, Tennessee, and Seattle, Green Bay.
Yep. With New Orleans, Tennessee being a tricky one for me. I went for New Orleans based on Tennessee being quite up and down at the moment.
I mean, Tennessee are coming into this on the back of beating the LA Rams quite convincingly, I would say.
It was a convincing win, but it was so out of nowhere for me. You know, like in terms of the wins that they have had this season, they've been a bit less, you know, completely convincing for those anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they are a strange one, aren't they, Tennessee? Because week one, we beat them. And then we've also beat the Rams, so that makes us a better team than both of them. In theory.
It's true, yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah. What's the name of that weird trophy that goes around? You take it off the last team you beat.
I do know the one you caught. I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name on this off the top of my head. I will have to look that up. See what the current status of that is.
Yeah. It gets caught in like divisions somewhere, you know. Gets stuck like circling round.
Yeah. I can't remember when I think the last time I remember seeing it was probably like the Philadelphia Eagles were holding it. Whether that's still the case now, I'm not sure.
And then of course the other difference that we have is Seattle and Green Bay.
And I'm interested I'm interested to know why you're going with Seattle on this one.
I mean, for me, I think Green Bay are just in, you know, some sort of turmoil, as it were. I know they did okay during the week there. But my thought was Seattle would be so buoyed by the evidence of Russell Wilson, you know, coming back. I don't think he'll be playing in that game, but I just foresee this being an upset.
Well, I mean, it's either you're going with Aaron Rodgers and his medical degree from Joe Rogan, or you're going with Seattle, Russell Wilson and his magic finger, which is the best finger in the world, apparently, now.
Do you know, will Aaron Rodgers be back for that?
I think he's hoping to be back by Sunday, but he still has to pass a few tests or something.
Yeah, still has to hit the negative tests and stuff like that.
I mean, he has got enough time to be on Pat McAfee's show again today. So, you know, maybe it was revealed on there. I just haven't watched it yet.
I'm sure we'll find out. But yeah, odd one overall.
Yeah, I mean, I have gone with Green Bay, though, just because, you know, I like seeing Seattle struggle. And, you know
yeah.
Long may that continue.
But it would be very on brand for Seattle to, like, you know, pull out a win there and be just remaining in a little bit of fight for the NFC West. You know, just hold on till Russell Wilson gets back and then have a run at it.
I mean, they are only on 3 wins, aren't they, so far this season? So it's like, you know, they're already a few wins behind where they should be.
Yeah, but like this, you know, this is almost starting to get to the like last chance saloon point. Not that they would need to win out to get at it or anything like that, but you know, they need to start pulling in the wins now if they want any chance at catching up with us or the Rams.
Well, us basically, not the Rams. We're better than the Rams. We hold the tiebreakers for the time being.
I suppose technically they would only need to catch up to the Rams, right? You know, if they wanted a wild card spot or something.
Well, I mean, there was technically 2 wild cards, 3 wild card spots available. So, yeah, you know, they could realistically have 2 extra teams from the division in the wild card, as well as the division winner.
That would be so crazy. Although, if there's any division that would do it, the NFC West is the one to take that, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. But there is one game we haven't talked about in our predictions, and that is the Arizona Cardinals Week 9, where they host the Carolina Panthers this coming Sunday.
Sunday at 9:05, so we're back to the early late game slot. And we're up against a team that's been a bit of a bugbear for us.
Yeah, I mean, as well, before we get onto that, we do have it is on Fox again, but for at least for this week, it's not a Mark Sanchez commentary game, so we can all breathe easily.
Yeah, that's well. Although it's a shame because we can't follow the trend of winning Mark Sanchez games, but you know, I'll take it that I don't have to listen to him.
I mean, we still do have, like, for the remaining games in the season, I think we've got 5 more on Fox, unless you get flexed out, obviously, but yeah. So we do have a chance for, like, 5 more, possibly, Mark Sanchez commentated games. So either look forward to them or despair at your, whichever you choose.
Yeah. I mean, a man can hope anyway, but less worried about the commentary team and more worried about the Cardinals' previous record versus the Panthers, because that's 5 straight games that we've lost to them, including, I think, at least one game that we don't talk about anymore, but maybe 2.
Yeah, we don't talk about those games anymore, considering the fact we haven't beaten them since 2013.
Oh, man, that's just way too long.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's like the longest streak of any team we've got like a losing record against. I'm not sure I would find that out. I'm sure someone would find it out, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where I think it's tricky because, like, ultimately, this is not the Panthers team that we have a losing streak against. Like, this is a very, very different Panthers team to ones that we've played in recent years, right?
Yeah, I mean, it is a strange one, this Panthers team, because, like, you look at them this season, they're like, I think they're a top 5 defense, but their offense is just horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a stat at the moment going around that I saw, and I copied it into the document. The Carolina Panthers have 1 touchdown in their last 36 offensive possessions.
Oh, that's rough. I assume they've been kicking a bunch of field goals with that, at least. But
still. Do you know who their kicker is?
It's not Graham Gano anymore, then.
It's not, no. It's someone we know pretty well.
Is it not Chandler Catanzaro?
It's not Chandler Catanzaro. I mean, he is bad like Catanzaro, but he does still have a job, unlike Catanzaro. Think of last season, our kicker.
Yeah, one of our old friends, is it?
It is, yeah. The one who went off to fight in the Turkish military, that is. Oh, Twitter, man. Was hacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
St. Gonzalez?
Yeah. What a interesting place for him to end up.
St. Gonzalez revenge game, possibly.
Oh, man. Like, that's not a comparison you want to be making, right? Is, you know, like last year's kicking to this year's kicking.
Well, I mean, yeah, this year is completely head and shoulders, isn't it? Night and day difference. It's like we've gone from having, I don't think, what did he usually say? Something really posh. Like, they got from beans on toast from last year to like a 5-course meal this year with Matt Prater.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll go for that. No, it's big, big difference. And, you know, ultimately, like, we were losing games last year due to inconsistent kicking, and this year we've just been, you know, out here having a ball with it.
I suppose there is one thing we can take from it, though. We all remember how bad Zane Gonzalez was kicking at State Farm Stadium, and that's where this game will be played at.
That's true, actually. That must factor in psychologically, right? You know, like, he had some of his biggest career misses there. I think the only big career miss the biggest career miss he had when he wasn't a Cardinal was the miss that he had with the Browns in New Orleans when they could have won.
Yeah, I mean, I think he missed 2 in that game, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Like, pretty much back to back as well.
Hopefully he, like, listens to this podcast and he remembers and it, like, brings him back bad memories, flashbacks to it. And it affects his performance on Sunday.
Still, I mean, if they've only scored 1 touchdown in the last 36 possessions, then you imagine you're going to actually see quite a bit of them in this game.
Well, I mean, as long as you actually get into field goal range, and that's like true. We know, there's no such thing as Zane Gonzalez range because he's so inconsistent.
Yeah, you might as well roll a dice and see how far back it can go. But yeah, ultimately, I don't think it will do, but like, if it does turn into a kicking contest, I think we might have the edge on it.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm definitely taking Matt Prater over Zane Gonzalez like 100 times out of 100.
Yeah, definitely.
But, like, if it's life or death matter, you know, your life is on it. It's like, yeah, I'll take Praetor over Gonzalez.
Yeah, fine. Yeah, I think I'll take Praetor there as well. But no, I think, as I said before, you know, this is a team that has been a bugbear for the Cardinals, knocking us out of the postseason a couple times, having, you know, some really, really tricky games against them. But ultimately, that's from a few years ago, you know, back when they had Supercam and everything like that. And, you know, really, one of the last vestiges there is Christian McCaffrey, who I think is healthy again, right?
Well, as healthy as Christian McCaffrey can be, considering only just return back from injury this past weekend.
I suspect he'll still probably be on some sort of snap count, right?
I mean, it is a week after his return, so possibly not. They might, you know, I guess shove him with like 40 carries again or something like that.
Yeah. Well, because I think if ever there was a time to force your running back to come back a little bit early, it's against the Cardinals, who's like, you know, one weakness this year has been run defense.
Yeah, well, I mean, last week against the New England Patriots, he had 14 carries for 52 yards and 4 receptions for 54 yards. So that they're pretty low numbers in comparison to what he usually does.
Yeah, I think especially the carries there, 14 for 50-odd yards, means he was getting stuffed up pretty early.
Yeah, averaged 3.7 yards and didn't find the end zone, which obviously, with them not scoring in those possessions, you know, clearly he wouldn't have done.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know. Yeah, it seems like that could be a big factor. But then, of course, obviously Sam Darnold is looking maybe questionable with a shoulder issue.
Yeah, I mean, he did throw 3 interceptions in that game against New England. I think there's something Bill Belichick has over him, you know, considering all the times he dominated him while he was at the Jets.
It's true, yeah.
So, you know, if it's Sam Darnold up against Vance Joseph, then, you know, I think I'm taking Vance Joseph's defense to manage to force some turnovers on him again.
But yeah, and then if he's injured as well, then they're down to some guy called PJ Walker.
Yeah, he was a standout. I think he was in the, you know, when he did that Alliance of American Football League, which lasted a few weeks before it folded. Yeah, he was one of the standouts in that. So,
oh, cool.
I mean, it's good to see him get a job after that.
Yeah, but definitely.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect much from him, considering he's, I don't think he's ever played in the NFL before. He might have had like a few snaps here and there, but, you know.
He's a warm body, basically, at this point.
Yeah, and considering the struggles you've had on offense, it's like, who are they going to be throwing to? Because I think you've been struggling with drops from DJ Moore, from Robbie Anderson. It's like, nothing seems to be going right for them on offense, but like we mentioned before, their defense is literally one of the best in the NFL this year. I think the top 5 in most categories.
Yeah, they've been really dragging that team forward, you know, like with the just ability to keep opponents to a low enough score for their offense to do just something to keep them in the game.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've seen that before, but I think ultimately, you know, up against the Cardinals, like, that's going to be put to the test big time, right?
Yeah, I mean, especially if Kyle Murray's back in under center for this one, you know, that'll definitely test their defense a lot more than Colt McCoy will.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I've also not seen at all the, like, even semblance of anybody claiming that Kyler wouldn't be back this week.
I mean, I think it's still day-to-day and they'll know more on Wednesday, which, you know, typically is the day after we've recorded.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, after the display that Colt McCoy had last week, you could be sort of saying, like, well, it's not the worst idea if Kyler sits out another week, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, especially with, like, the tough games on the horizon as well. I mean,
exactly,
not to look past Carolina, because I think with the likes of...
you'd do that at your peril, right?
Yeah, I mean, with the likes of Hassan Reddick, Shaq Thompson, Jeremy Chin, guys like that on their defense, you know, they're capable of causing problems. Let's not forget Stephon Gilmore as well at cornerback.
Yeah. I forgot that Sam Reddick was with the Panthers now as well. I mean, you could almost call it a revenge game with him, but I think it seemed like a pretty amicable breakup when it happened, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got 6.5 sacks this season, so he's just behind Marcus Golden.
I mean, he was really coming into his own last season after a couple of really tricky injury seasons before that, right?
And then not playing him where he should be played, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But Carolina seemed to be doing that, you know, telling him just go after the quarterback, and it seems to be working.
Yeah, just like second boy, go for it.
Well, did we never think of that, eh?
It would have been good, wouldn't it?
Like, but literally, still, from the moment he'd been drafted, you know, let's just make him do that. But no, we had to try and make him an inside linebacker.
Could have been great. It could have been great at that. But yeah, clearly, just following his natural instinct is like what's working for him.
Yeah. So should we move on to some predictions for this game?
Tricky one to predict, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it really could be. It could go either way. I mean, it will go to the Cardinals' way because we're a Cardinals podcast.
I don't think either of us are even remotely considering voting against the Cardinals here, but. You know, the thing that's holding me back here is obviously they've got such a good defense, but we've got such a good offense. You know, if we put up 31 points against the 49ers with a, you know, beaten down, broken down offense that we had, you know, I feel like we could put up 31 points against the Panthers with, you know, a full strength offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one. Like, how far do you think they're going to win by? And how many points will the Panthers be able to put together? Will it just be field goals? Or will Zane Gonzalez miss them all?
I think, like, you know, ultimately we were talking a few weeks ago about how the Cardinals were scoring on average, like 31 points. And they scored 31 points last week. And they were giving up on average 17 points. But I don't think that they're going to give up 17 to a team that hasn't scored in 36 possessions. So I think I'm going to have to give the Panthers like 6. And I'm going to give the Cardinals, let's say, 20, 29, something like that. 28. Yeah, let's go 28.
Okay. I'm going to say Panthers 9, Cardinals 20. Yeah.
That's the thing as well, is like, if you are, it depends how much you lead by as well, right? Because like, if you're leading 20 to like 3 or 6 or something like that, you don't stretch yourself, right? You don't go nuts. You don't bring out the big plays.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think they might have to bring out some sort of plays, you know, to break down the defense, you know, just to get into like scoring range.
Definitely.
But yeah. I mean, if Kyler plays, you know, it might be more than 20, but, you know, conservative estimates, I'll just say 20. You know, it's Cardinals win. Don't care, do we? As long as we get 9-1.
Precisely. Precisely.
But I think that'll do it for this week's episode of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. So as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. If you're on Facebook, like us at facebook.com/British Bird Gang and join the group at facebook.com/groups/British Bird Gang. Buy British Bird Gang merch at britishbirdgang.tml.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review wherever it is you get your podcast from. And yep, that's all the plugs done. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week for episode 127 or 8. I've lost count.
I have a feeling it's going to be a really good one, so I'll see you next week.
Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.